G'day, my name's Mike Ashcroft, and today I'm going to present to you Practical Metro. What is Practical Metro? Well, it's about taking an application, an idea that you've got, and building it on the Metro platform in a fast, efficient, and deliberate way. So before we begin, let's run through the quick agenda of what we're going to cover today. So I want to talk about the background of how we started this journey at Datacom. It's quite important because we built a Metro application incredibly quickly, and the things that we learned along the way are going to help you build your applications even faster than what we could. We're going to talk about planning. Planning is quite key because it creates clarity in what you're delivering, and without clarity, you're going to hit too many hurdles. So we're going to cover how we managed to do a planning exercise that was incredibly efficient and enabled us to deliver this platform in such a short space of time. Mitch, there's also usability. Usability is one of the key aspects of the Metro platform. You've got to build applications that follow the Metro way. And the usability is something you've got to test and understand. And we went through an excellence lab with Microsoft, and we're going to show you everything that we learned from that exercise. And finally, it's about testing. We're going to show you how to test the application and the sort of things you need to focus on. The sort of things that when we were testing, these issues kept coming up. So with all those, you'll be able to get away and start building your application fast. So how did we actually start our journey? It all started with the fact that in Datacom, we actually need to take on technology before it's actually got to a mature state. And in order for us to cross the threshold and get to a certain level of capability, we need some tools to help us actually get up to speed on this tech. And we have an innovation program, and one of the tools that we have in Datacom is to create a competition weekend. So this flyer went up around Datacom about 2 months before we actually began the competition. And what it is it's 2 days of everyone in Datacom getting together, forming teams, and implementing an idea for the first time in Metro. There are some great things about this that you can't really achieve when you're just trying to learn Metro development by yourself. And that is, how do you know when you're developing Metro applications that's fairly new, what you're doing is right? That the solutions that you're building are best practice, good practice? And the easiest way I find to actually know that you're on the right track is to have consensus. And the best way to get consensus is through a team environment. Now, our team for the Metro competition was comprised of 9 people of varying backgrounds, from Java through to .NET, and we had system integrators. We had a whole range of skills. No one had actually built Metro applications prior to this competition. And so we're all starting from scratch. We'd all done the tutorials online. We thought we were prepared. But there's something quite unique about building an application that's bespoke for the first time. It's like, where do you start? How do you know what you're doing that's right? So what was the idea that we came up with for implementing an application to win this competition? One of our developers, Pradeep, came up with the idea that there's definitely a need when we're in meetings to be engaged. But we also need to understand that we need to take away the information from those meetings and analyze that after the session. And so to create an application that would enable us to officially engage in meetings and then search those notes and everything else at the end of the session afterwards. So I think the best thing for me to do is to show you how this application actually works. And so I'm holding here one of the Windows 7 devices that's a Samsung tablet, but it's really quite good as soon as you install Windows 8 and you can run it effectively. This is our application, Capture Live. We're only just going to give a brief demo of it. When you start up in Capture Live, there are essentially 2 things you can do. You can start recording a session, or you can play back a session. You can see as we scroll through that all our sessions are captured there on the right-hand side. There's a bit of intelligence behind that we'll talk about later when we get into usability. But the simple things that you can do are go in, you can start typing text messages such as hello world, and you can also do things such as drawings, and the drawings can have a range of capabilities. You can draw rectangles, ellipses, change the color, font, strokeness, etc. The other things you can do is you can take a video. So when you're actually in a session, you could be recording the video at the same time. So as you can see, the devices work very effectively. And the amazing thing about Metro applications is this stuff is easy to do because you can hook into something called the WinRT API. And for those of you who haven't used the API before, you can actually get a whole lot of samples from the Microsoft documentation that show you how to use it. So, oops, these things happen. So, the other things we can do on our application are we can do bookmarks. And this was something that we wanted to achieve in a meeting. So when you're actually in a meeting, you want to just tag points in time rather than get too worried about what you're typing down. So as we're actually in this session now, it's recording everything we're saying, and every time we click that bookmark, it's actually indexing in that audio track where we're at. So the key things about this is it's not actually about just taking a service and pulling it down to the Metro application. It's actually creating content as well. So there's a lot of challenges in this application that haven't really been touched before. So we can actually go into playback mode. So if you go into playback mode, essentially you get a list of all the events that you've taken over time, and when you click on a specific event, it takes you to that point in the audio track. So you can actually search for these specific points in time and then refer back to the audio to find the information that you want. The key thing is that most of the information we perceive today is not the handouts and the presentation. It's the actual audio information that you get. Our application hooks into all the charms, so you can do and you can type searching. So I'm just trying to think of something I've entered in here. So you can actually type in Singapore or something like that, search it, and it brings up all of the text notes that we have that have got Sing in it. So it's easy to find all the information that you need. So that's a brief introduction of our application. What I want to show you now is actually how did we get there, and so quickly as well. So the key thing to actually starting these things is planning. And planning can sometimes be considered a roadblock to actually getting things moving forward because it can take too long. The key thing about planning is about creating clarity. And I often think this picture describes the situation fairly well. It can actually be fun playing in the mud, not knowing where you're going and what you're doing. But if you've got planning and you've got clarity, you can take the easy option across the river. And Metro applications at the moment is quite an impressive thing to be involved in because there's not a lot of competition out there at the moment. So you need to find the most efficient way to get your applications out there so that you can be the one that ends up selling the most. We had a very clear vision, and it's important for you, everyone, to establish what the vision is, and it's got to be simple. For us, it was incredibly simple. We just wanted to win the competition. But we wanted to do it with a commercial application so that we could then take that application and evolve it after just the 2 days that we're working on this thing. Once you've actually identified your vision, it's very important to establish what sort of characteristics of your application are going to help you achieve that vision. So we identified 4 key goals that would help us achieve that. The first thing is it had to be achievable. We only had 2 days to build something. So that means that a lot of applications just aren't possible because they've got so many complexities behind them. We needed something that was going to show off Metro capability because we just didn't want to take a standard app and then try and win the competition with that because we wouldn't win. We wanted something unique. Now, uniqueness is something quite unusual. People think uniqueness is about creating a new application from scratch, something that no one's done before. But you can actually do something unique by just taking a twist on something that hasn't been seen before. Metro really enables you to do that because the user interface is so fresh. And finally, we wanted a commercial application. So once we had actually got those goals agreed across the team, we all went away and started thinking about ideas about the applications that we could build to help us achieve that goal, those goals and that vision. We came up with 6 applications across the team, and we rated them against all of these goals. We had a simple philosophy of down the left-hand side, we had our goals, across the top, we had our applications. And if an application supported one of the goals strongly, we'd give it 2 ticks. If it weakly supported it, we'd just give it 1 tick. And if it didn't support it, it didn't get a tick at all. And what that meant is across the entire team, we could clearly understand which applications we were going to be successful with. And there are only 2. And that's where prioritization comes in, because there was only 1 application that ticked the highest priority boxes. And at this point, it's creating alignment and clarity across the entire team about what we're going to deliver. They know that they're trying to build a unique metro-driven application, and so when they're going off and actually building the solution, they know where to focus their energy. So once we'd actually determined the actual application we wanted to build, we then had to go and identify what capabilities and what functions we were going to build into this application. And all we did is essentially have an unconstrained brainstorming session where we just listed all the features we could ever dream of for this application. Once we'd stopped running out of ideas, we then started ranking all of the ideas from 1 to 10, 10 being the most important. And once we've got everything rated, we found that we could actually classify them into groups of capability. And those groups of capability were quite key, because then we could assign people to a specific group of capability that they could then implement. And that's important, because no longer are we micromanaging everyone. They know what capability they have to work on. They can go away and actually understand that functionality, how it's going to be represented. And most importantly, what aspects of the Metro platform they need to understand to implement that functionality. Because we were all new to the WinRT API at that particular point in time, so to try and understand everything was just not going to work. Once we had identified our capabilities, the one thing we didn't do that we probably should have done was create a use case. Use cases are quite good because they help us understand how the application is actually going to be used. We thought our use case was actually fairly straightforward, so we wouldn't need to worry about it too much. But we were kind of wrong, and as we got down towards the end of the application, a use case would have helped us in how the system is going to actually be implemented. And it's actually about creating clarity across the team. Some other artifacts that we came up with were page flows. So page flows in the Metro environment are actually very simple. They're shallow applications, so they don't take long to create at all. This one took less than 2 hours. So it's about understanding how the application is going to navigate, and if it can be used to help project plan development exercises. The other thing we did is we created simple screen mock-ups. The important thing here is not to create complex, very artistic screen mock-ups, because these things change, especially when you're working with a new interface you haven't used before. And if you create screen mock-ups that take too long to build, you're either not going to change them or you're going to slow down your productivity. The final thing that we thought was quite important was the understanding of the data model. We weren't just pulling down a service, we were actually creating data. And so we needed to understand how we were going to store that. So we had a simple logical entity that we actually created like this. If on some projects, you may want to list the attributes out, but we didn't need that level. We just needed to understand the structure of data. So in essence, we did 4 workshops lasting approximately 2 hours each, and that was our planning leading up to the competition. We weren't allowed to code up front, so this was quite key. We were actually walked into the competition feeling quite confident, because we had clarity about what we're going to deliver. However, in your cases, you may be actually delivering applications that are far more complex than what we're doing. They could be enterprise-grade applications, not necessarily a consumer-driven application. So how does this model work when you're wanting to build these enterprise-grade applications? It's just a matter of adding in the other considerations that you need to factor in. What business processes are going to be impacted by your application? What architecture principles must you follow? I mean, there are a couple of options just in how you can build Metro applications. You can do it in C# and XAML, which is what we chose, because that's where our core skill set was. But you can actually also build Metro applications using HTML5 and JavaScript. Interfaces. If you are interfacing with a whole lot of services, you want to clearly define those so you know how you're going to be pulling data down. And you certainly want to know what systems you're pulling data from in the back end and where that data is going to be mastered. The Metro applications are fairly lightweight presentation layer applications is the way I'd describe them. You want to keep all of your logic still sitting in the back end. So once we'd actually gone through and done all our planning, we'd gone and built this application. It took about a day before we actually had something working. And I remember when we were actually walking down to the judges, we were unfortunately the first ones to get assessed. We were kind of trying to do that last build, and then we were chucking the USB drive in the actual device as we were walking down the elevator to deploy it on the actual tablet. So we didn't even test it before, we didn't have an opportunity to test it. But fortunately, it actually worked. And once we'd actually got this done, we had about a week to prepare for a usability review with Microsoft. And this is where we learned a whole lot more about how applications should behave in the Metro environment. So what I want to do is run you through the application we have today and show you what we changed from our original concepts. So if I close it off, the first thing that you've got to think about is your live tile. Our live tile here is standing out as a Capture Live tile. Our original live tile was white, and it couldn't really stand out from all the other tiles in the actual start menu. You really want to create a distinctive tile that enables you to stand out and be easy to find. This is a live tile. You don't have to have a live tile. And if we turn off the actual live, we end up with our Capture Live logo there, which stands out a bit more. So if we actually go into the live tile, there's one other thing about the live tile. We actually used a default naming scheme for our notes. It shows you the last five notes. And we used untitled as our default name for a note. So that didn't really help you explain which application it was associated with. So we actually defaulted our naming to Capture Live. So when we're actually in the start menu screen here, the key thing you'll notice is that we've got a series of grids. And when we first implemented our Metro application, it was very demo-y, shall we say. So these grids all looked fairly similar. And that's the first thing you want to try and remove. You want to create distinctive tiles in your grid so people can find what they're looking for incredibly easily. The other thing that we've done is we want to actually highlight what is the most important data behind these notes. So we've actually gone through and added a lot of intelligence behind each of these tiles. So it searches through the entire note and finds out which information is going to be the most relevant to create a distinctive tile and provide the most relevant information to the user. If you also look at the start menu, we've actually got some icons that tell you how to navigate, how to create a new marker, for instance, or to create a new text event. The funny thing is we thought those icons were quite intuitive, but when we put it in front of the usability groups, they didn't understand it at all. So when creating a clean interface, you can actually remove some of the usability of your system, and it's quite important to make sure that people understand how your system's going to be used. And I'll talk about usability testing later. A lot of the changes we actually made were in the recording screen. The first thing is we had a title up the top here, which you could change. But we had that defaulting to untitled. You've got to make it something meaningful so that people don't have to change it if they don't want to. The other thing was you've got to think about how your application is going to respond to borders. So if we swipe from the right, you can see our charms are coming in from the right-hand side. They're obliterating our buttons. If that's okay for you, then that's fine. But if you don't want to hide that, then you've got to factor that into your design. The other aspect you need to think about is app bars. When they come up from the bottom and from the top, they also obscure parts of your application. And you've got to think about that in your design. Our logo, for instance, is displayed there in the top right-hand corner. When we bring up the app bar, it actually replaces that logo there. But if you didn't, your branding gets lost. And branding is important on your application because you need your application to be identified with your application and not someone else's. So there's some other things that we didn't do very well because we were actually building on a desktop environment. And we didn't have access to tablets like this. And designing for touch is one of the most important things you can do. You can't neglect the desktop environment, but you absolutely must design for touch. And there are some assumptions we made, especially around this whole app bar concept, that were incorrect. We actually wanted to put a lot of the functionality on the screen because that's the fastest way for a right mouse click, to make a mouse click rather than using the swipe up gesture. But when you're using the actual application itself, swiping up from the bottom is incredibly efficient and it gives you all the cleanness of your screen to actually do what you need to do. There's another thing that we'd created and we spent a lot of time on this, and this is quite key. We tried to push the boundaries and reinvent the wheel. And the way we did that is we wanted to create, we had this formula. In order to make an efficient application, we wanted to reduce the number of swipes and button clicks that you had to make to achieve a goal. So what we'd done is we'd created this control that would enable you to swipe to the left to save a particular text event, or drag down to the bottom and a trash can would come up so you could delete an event. The problem with that is it's not a metro control. No one knew how to use it, and we would have to explain it in help files and everything else. And although we thought it was a pretty cool gesture, it was the first thing that Microsoft Excellence Lab said we had to remove. And I can see why. The app bar concept of just saving is incredibly efficient. And we don't actually need to go and create these extra gestures. And then developing applications is a whole lot faster as well. So some other things I would like to show you. Color schemes. Everything here in our application is blue. But we thought that in some cases, text is more readable in black. So we added some black text in a couple of locations. But that's deviating away from our color scheme. You've got to keep your color scheme consistent across your application. The other thing you've got to do is obey your font hierarchy. So we thought that in the text area, we could actually increase the size of the font in here so that people could read the text more clearly. But what ended up happening is that it was breaking the rules of the font hierarchy, and we kind of got rejected at the first hurdle in the Excellence Lab. So we've talked about obeying borders. We've talked about font hierarchy, consistent text color. We've talked about not fighting the framework. Work within the Microsoft framework. They've done a lot of testing for you, and if you work within the framework, you're going to have an application that is incredibly usable. There's one other thing you can see at the top left-hand corner, and that is the back button. The back button should always take you to the previous page. In our particular cases, we had about three levels of depth to our application in the original application, and our back button would in some cases take you back to the home screen. It was a bit of a mistake, but it's just something you have to watch out for. Another thing is that when you go into snapped view, in this particular case here, our application is running in snapped view. The problem you've got in snapped view is you don't have a lot of real estate. You have to run your functionality in a reduced mode. So you've got to think about what you are presenting in your application for the snapped view so it's more efficient. In this particular case, you can scroll down, it works fine, but we've only provided the three most common options for our application. One thing we haven't done, because we didn't think we needed to do it, was create settings. So the settings that you have there at the moment, we have there, are the edit marker labels. So we can actually go in and change the meaning of the various marker labels so that when we're going through and marking specific events, someone may choose that green is follow-up, someone may choose that blue is interesting. But you can change it to suit the individual user. There are other things that you can do in settings, such as when you can go into recording, you can turn off the actual auto recording. So you can manually start it rather than recording every time you start up a new session. The one other thing to think about with applications is this whole suspension and termination. So your application, when it's not being used in back, when it's not in the actual foreground, so I close it like that, it's going to, well, that's going to kill the application. But when I bring the application into the background, like it's still there in the background, in 5 seconds it's actually going to terminate. And so I need to handle that state. And I need to handle that state by ensuring that I close off all the activity I'm doing. In most cases, it's not an issue because it's just displaying content. But if I'm actually recording something, I need to make sure I close off that recording because Microsoft doesn't let you record audio and video in the background. So we actually stop the session from recording. Now, that's a design constraint as well. So how does our application work when the user wants to actually go and go into a note-taking mode and then use another application? And that's why SnapView is so important. We can actually drag our application into a snapped mode and it can still be recording because it's not operating in the background. So one thing we're building in our next version is sharing. Sharing is about leveraging the power of your application. And in this particular case, we have the ability to capture photos, video, text. They can be shared with things like Twitter, Facebook, and other applications. We don't want to build all that functionality in this system. We want to share it with other systems. And we have a share tab over here that would enable us to export our photos and videos to a photo and video editing software, and then we can re-import them back in. So it's important to create shared targets and shared source to really bring your application alive and leverage everything that is available on the Microsoft platform. With settings, it's important that they roam. So if I actually changed the interesting setting here, my entire application would be consistent across all devices. You don't want to save your settings in a local environment. So all in all, we found this particular review from Microsoft incredibly useful. It gave us lots of advice on how to build a better application. And when you get reviewed yourself, those are the sorts of things that you'll need to factor in. So in summary, there's a few things we need to talk about. We don't want to fight the framework. We want to work with the framework that Microsoft's provided. If you work within the framework, you're going to be able to build applications faster. They're going to be usable and more consistent. Use the app bars. It's where the functionality has to be. On the left-hand side of the app bar is where all the contextual functionality is, the functionality that belongs to the current screen. On the right-hand side, you have the global functionality of the application. Obey your borders. Watch out for that virtual keyboard that pops up and shifts everything on the screen up. Is that okay for your application or is it not? Watch out for when app bars come up and what it's going to do to obscure your content. Keep your design shallow. Don't create a complex page tree that you can follow down. Just keep it one or two levels if you can. Snapped, landscape, and portrait modes need to be considered and tested. Just building an application in a landscape mode is not enough. Having it in Snapped and understanding the functionality that you need in Snapped is important. Think about distinctive tiles. How are you going to make sure that people can easily find the content that they're looking for? And design for touch on tablets. Don't forget about the desktop, but definitely design for touch on tablets. Leverage the charms. You have to do that. Make your application searchable. Everything on our application can be searched, all of our text fields. Make sure you can share with other things to actually get the power off the platform. And bubble up exceptions. So if you have an exception that gets handled in your application, you want to capture that and deal with it if you can. But if you can't deal with it, you need to bubble it up and throw it up onto the user interface and give the option for the user to actually send that error through to yourself or ourselves for fixing. So testing. This is quite an interesting thing. You can actually do unit testing if you prefer, and there's a session later on that. But the most important testing we found was usability testing, where we actually took our application out, explained very briefly about the purpose of our application, and then we just sat down and watched them use it. And it was quite humbling when you sit there and see someone looking at your application and they don't know how to use it. That means that we've missed something and we need to address it. And a lot of our application has been refined just by sitting it in front of users for the first time and understanding how they use our application. But in order to use an application effectively, you've got to think about the various modalities that you can use for testing your application. In our particular case, we started off developing in Visual Studio. In Visual Studio, it's just a matter of running it on your local machine, but you're using mouse and keyboard to interact with the device. The problem with mouse and keyboard is that you're designing completely differently from a tablet perspective. So Microsoft have created this thing called the simulator mode, which is just a pull-down menu when you're debugging your application, and it brings up a simulator, and that's the one on the top left-hand corner. It enables you to do multi-touch gestures, and we can run you through this later. But the one drawback of the simulator mode is that it still doesn't feel like a tablet. You haven't got it in your lap, and you're not playing with it with your hands. You're still using a mouse and a keyboard. So it's not giving you a feel of true usability, but it is a great tool for testing your snap view, your rotation, your different resolutions. And it's quite amazing when I first actually took our application and put it up onto a projector that was only 1028 by 760, our application looked really bad because it didn't scale well for the small screens. So it's really important not to forget about the simulator and try different resolutions. Now, the other options you have for tablets is you've got something like the Samsung tablet I'm using on the bottom left-hand corner. It's a great device, but it's expensive. They're about $2,000 a hit. And if you don't want to invest in that technology, then you can actually leverage things like iPads and Android devices that are already out there using some software by SplashTop. And what that does is you install the SplashTop streamer on your Windows 8 machine, and you essentially remote connect into that Windows 8 machine from your tablet. But it gives you all of the Windows 8 gestures, and so you can actually start to test your Windows 8 functionality on an Apple or an Android device. The one thing you've got to watch out for is screen resolution. So you need something like the new iPad in order to do this testing, because in order to test for snapped mode, you need at least a width of 1366 pixels. And finally, very soon in October, they're going to be launching a whole bunch of new devices. And so if you have the opportunity to purchase something like the Surface 2, I'd thoroughly recommend it if you're building Metro applications. Don't just develop on your desktop. find a tablet and use it, so you can actually understand how to get the best touch experience out of your application. So one other thing that's always in the mind, when do we actually deploy to the store? And really it's about balancing up that whole equation of trying to get into the market early and make the most of the fact that there's not a lot of competition out there. But you've also got to weigh up the fact that you need to build a robust application. Don't deploy an application into the App Store just because you can. Make sure it works robustly. Now, the one thing you've got to be careful of is not actually trying to build the perfect application on day one. If you try and create all the functionality on day one that you deploy it in the store, you may never deploy it in the store. So you're thinking about what is the core capability that you need to deliver, and then get that functionality done, deploy it in the store, get feedback from your users out in the cloud, and actually modify your application. That's the best way. Deploy a small chunk of your application first and build it. If you've got a good concept, people will like it, and you can then evolve that over time. So this picture here is essentially about saying don't start too early. But, you know, definitely think about, you know, keeping your core functionality and don't get too carried away with trying to do too much. Now, the one thing about Metro applications is there's so much information out there on the internet that you can use. And everyone here is going to have a different problem, a different idea that you want to implement. So no one can teach you that, because you're going to come up with unique scenarios. So you've got to find ways in order to solve your problems, especially from a coding perspective. So TechEd will be kind of like an introduction for you. But the Microsoft Dev Center has some amazing resources, and we were referencing this incredible amount. We were looking at the SDK samples that you can actually go in, compile on your machine, and then see the various options that you can do for, say, taking photos. And then you can look at the code that they've provided in either JavaScript or C#, and actually bring that back into your own application. The one thing that can be a bit misleading is these samples are not copy and paste. You can't just copy the code and drop it in your application, because you might be using something like an MVVM framework to actually build your application, which means that you need to change a few things. But it gets you about 80% there. To get to the 100%, you need to refer to the API documentation for WinRT quite a lot. And with those two things by itself, that's probably all you need. Microsoft have really invested a lot of time in building up this documentation, and it's very unusual to actually find that amount of information to get you started. I actually started using LearnDev now, because when I first played with a Windows tablet, I was actually lost about, you know, is this a good operating system or not, because it is so different from Windows 7. So LearnDev now has a couple of courses there that show you how to use Windows 8 and how to build the basics of a Metro application. And I can't emphasize enough that understanding the power of Windows 8 is key when you're building Metro applications, because that's how you're going to make applications that really rock. If you want more detailed training, Pluralsight is something our developers use. And we used that to solve some of our very tricky problems. Especially around roaming settings, etc., etc. And finally, you can always get the books off Amazon.com. But the Microsoft Dev Center is a great site. Go to it. It will have everything you need. So I've got a few prizes I thought I'd give away today. These are 32 gigabyte high-speed USB drives. These things absolutely rock. They've got 120 megabytes per second read performance and 50 megabytes per second write performance. So you can use it for Windows to go when you buy your Windows devices. So I've got a couple of simple questions that you guys can easily answer, and we'll probably go through each section of the hall. So first thing is planning. What is the main thing that planning should give you? Yes?
Clarity.
Excellent. Fantastic. Ruby, so planning is all about clarity. So often we do planning to restrict scope, or we do planning because we feel like we have to. But it's about creating clarity. When you've got clarity, you can move forward fast. It doesn't need to be a long process. Yeah, excellent. Groovy. This one doesn't come in a ball. There you go. And right, very good. Now the next one. When should you start? Oh, I'm going to go down that end. They're all quiet. Yeah, very good. Oops. Not my best sport. Yep. So it is important to start now. This is an amazing platform. Don't miss the opportunity. You can really do some amazing things with this. And it's not hard. You've probably already got the skill sets. C# and XAML, JavaScript and HTML5. This is all easy stuff. And the tools are out there for you to do this stuff. And what we've done in such a short space of time will mean that you can do the same, but even faster. The key thing is we have not spent a single hour of our work time building this application. It's all been done in our own time. So if we were working on this full time, we could actually build so much more. The other thing about clarity, yeah, we've covered that. Usability, it's all about the user and creating a usable application. If it's simple to use, if it's a clear application, you'll actually have a lot of positive reviews. And use the Microsoft samples and reference documentation. It's a great resource for you to actually get started with. So I'd like to thank you very much. There's a few things I need to cover off before we go forward. There are a lot of sessions today that are going to be in this room that you should actually consider. There's the interaction continuum. For those that are wanting to get into building real-world XAML apps, these guys here are really good. They'll give you a detailed run through exception handling and coding, getting hands-on with the code. There's Windows apps for HTML and WinJS later on today as well. So if you're wanting to actually get into the HTML side versus C# and XAML, go to that session. It's about connecting enterprise services to Win8 apps. And unit testing in Visual Studio. So definitely consider they're all in these rooms here. And if you want to get hold of me to talk about anything, my email address is at the bottom there. There are a few other things that you need to know about. There's a Windows 8 lounge just across the way over in Sky City. And there's going to be free drinks there, I believe, and the ability to talk to people about the Windows 8. You get to play with the devices and everything else. And there's a bunch of resources. And the most important thing is to do an evaluation, get in the chance to actually win an Xbox and everything else. Now, we've got our development team here today, and I thought it would be quite key to actually, for you guys, to ask questions of our development team to actually find out where our challenges were and what we did to solve them. So, has anyone got any questions they'd like to ask? Sure.
Is there anything major that you can or can't do if you're going the HTML JavaScript way versus the XAML C# way?
Yeah, that was a good question. Do we choose HTML5 or C# XAML? We thought about this, and I actually thought that we'd actually start doing HTML5 and JavaScript because it seemed like a more generic language across. So I thought that would be the way to go. But we actually chose C# XAML just because of our skill set. Now, the main thing to think about, and I heard this when other people were talking about it, they say just go with the skill set that you know, because that's where you're going to be the most productive. And then I'm going, well, that doesn't sound right. There's got to be more to it than that. What limitations are there with JavaScript, and what limitations are there with C# XAML? We encountered limitations, but there was nothing that we couldn't work around. you do hit hurdles, and it can take sometimes, especially for our drawing, is a classic example. We couldn't serialize our drawing out to the disk, so we had to write our own serialization logic to actually persist that out to the disk, which is more effort, but you can do it. It's just a matter of, you know, taking a particular problem and getting creative with it and finding the way that you can make it happen. So go with what you're good at. That's where you'll be most productive. Sorry? That's a very good point. We're also thinking about adding those on the app bar as well, but we really wanted to have it on the screen so people knew what options were available to actually create in terms of object types. If we put it on the app bar, which we should do as well, but no, you're right, the app bar should be there, but we wanted it on the screen at the same time. Just creates clarity. We actually had, what happened is our original design actually had, because we used the swipe gesture to swipe to the left and swipe down to delete it, and when you'd done that, it came up with a grid in the center of the various options you could do about the next note that you could create. But of course, as soon as we got rid of that gesture to swipe and swipe down, we got rid of that and just kept it onto the side.
I think your app is better than some, but I've noticed it's hard to tell what you can and can't interact with. Have you got any comments about that?
Yeah, I mean, we're still going through some usability testing, and that's why I stressed that it's quite important. We're changing this app all the time. We don't believe we need to deploy it today. We're waiting till October. And we're actually chucking this application in front of users, trying to understand where we need to improve the application. There's one thing that I will show you is the bookmark functionality. Is it up there? It is, cool. So if we go into the bookmark functionality, this was something that we actually wanted to make kind of like the key thing, because we can actually just sit there and tap away and not, just be fully engaged in a meeting and not worry about typing stuff. So, but we've still got some things that we believe to actually make this more usable, and we're working on that in the next version. So when we actually gave this in front of users for the first time, it's come a long way. They actually didn't even know what it was. And we want to get to a point where we don't have to explain it to a user. They just intuitively think about it. So you're right, there's still usability things. There always will be. If you try and create the perfect application, it will never get in the App Store. That's something you've always got to weigh up. Yeah.
Is there any sort of touchscreen analogy to a mouse over? Because obviously you can mouse over something and get a little note.
Yeah, tooltips.
Yeah, tooltips.
Yep.
You can't do that with touch, right? Because you're touching it.
Correct. When we first built our application, we put tooltips on everything. And it's the first thing we removed. They're just not necessary. And that's the whole thing about touch.
So there's no sort of clear analogy?
Don't create tooltips, no. What we have done is we've sort of like, you can see most of our things have labels on the bottom of the buttons. So that creates the clarity that you need for the actual application functionality. But yeah, tooltips, not useful at all. Yeah. Any other questions? Yeah.
Do you have any kind of sharing built in?
We're working on sharing, especially with our photos and video. We want to export that across to a photo editing application, etc. The other thing that we want to do is we want to actually generate out a PDF report of all our notes. So we're creating the ability to export that to PDF, export it to Word, and you can configure how you generate that report. And so there's a bit of intelligence that's required to actually summarize everything that you've captured and put it into a nice, consistent format. When we first actually went into this competition, we were working in a paper mindset. And it was when talking to Microsoft that we realized we actually needed to think digital. So that's why we haven't actually got a single report at this point, because it's all about searching the content, finding the content that you need, and then jumping in to clarify it if you need that clarity. So the report is just kind of like a benefit that you can actually then email that to someone or upload it onto your SkyDrive account, etc. Yeah, we've got something, we're working on that. So when we went through our original brainstorming session, we've got some very clear ideas about what we want to do with sharing and coordinating with everyone. Everything about our application is indexed by time, so it's actually even possible to merge information from everyone's devices into our application. But remember, it's that whole thing that if you try and deliver too much on day one, you're actually not going to have an application in the App Store. The key thing we want to do is evolve that and then build onto the sharing functionality to get some of this more collaborative type note-taking taking place. Any more questions at all?
What's the nature of the back-end data storage?
Yeah, so we're used to chucking stuff in a database and in our normal application development. But at the time, there was no database that you could actually chuck this into. And so we're just persisting it to local storage. Now, we should be also syncing this up to things like SkyDrive. But it's essentially a JSON file that contains all the data. It's quite performant. We've got no issues with it. It actually works quite well. Remember, this is not a complex data set. The actual entity model that you saw up there before is fairly straightforward, so we don't actually need to put it into a relational database. The question would become is when you start sharing and collaborating, where do you do that? That's when it gets tricky. But you'd do that in the back end. You wouldn't actually be putting all that logic on your application. Because the one thing you've got to think about is fashion trends change. And so if you try and build too much into your application, it's going to be hard for you to move from one platform to the next. So if you're creating a lot of IP in your actual application and you've got it in the back end, then you're just creating a fairly lightweight interface and you can easily upgrade from one system to another. It's not a big step. All we'd do.
The user experience.
In terms of the app store. Yep.
And have it on my tablet.
Yep.
Where is the server? Do I run it locally?
No. It'd be a cloud service. Right. So some of the things that you can leverage are things like Azure, if you want to. But you can obviously, there's lots of cloud providers out there where you can run your own web services that you can hook into. So it's up to you and the type of application you're creating as to what you'd want to do. Yeah. As I say, the key thing is everyone's going to have their own different applications with different needs. You're going to have to go and figure out some of the unique aspects of your application. Are there any coding type questions you'd like to ask? No? So who's actually going to, in this room, think about actually building an application after today? Just two, three? Yeah. Who's going to start on Saturday? You should start on Saturday. You really should. You'll be surprised at just how easy it is. And while this stuff is all fresh in your head, you should be going out there and making the most of it. You'll be blown away with just how quick you can actually build up a grid interface and actually populate it with sexy-looking data. That's a good point. So there is an application we have used to build all our icons up, and it is free. Metro Studio. Is it Metro Studio? Yeah. So I can actually show you it if you want. Yeah? So if we go programs. So this is Metro Studio. It's essentially got all the icons. You can search through those icons and just create them out. So, oh, sorry. Thank you. That better? So Metro Studio, this is it. So you see all your icons there. You can click on something like a bookmark, which is one of the original ones we used. And you can change the size of that bookmark. That way you can actually change the things like the background style, and you can change the color, of course, to like so, and icon color, etc. And then you can save that out as a PNG and just import that into your assets of your solution. It's quite a cool tool. We used it quite a lot. It's a bonus. It's free. Sorry?
I said option is character map.
Okay. We didn't use character map though, did we?
No.
You did? Okay. So any other questions at all in terms of tools that we used? One thing I should probably mention is that XAML is quite a, when you're looking at it, it's like an HTML page, but it can get very difficult to debug. We didn't actually use Blend to do our development. We like to be hands-on with the code. So there's some actual practices that you should probably be looking at to make your XAML code more maintainable. And every element should definitely have a name associated with it. Then you don't need to comment your code. So have a nice crystal clear name. The other thing is about creating user controls. So if you've got a set of user controls, you can actually keep your XAML or your view fairly simple, and your user controls can then just be dropped in, and it keeps your code nice and clean. So our XAML is around actually structuring the layout, and then we try and drop user controls in to actually provide things like the buttons and the taking photos, etc. So it is quite important to keep your XAML clean. When we were rushing in the competition mode, we didn't have it clean, and trying to change it was a nightmare. Yeah, and you'd fix one thing and break something else. So, yeah, use user controls. And there's a session on that later as well.
Architecture-wise, did you go with MVVM or?
Yeah, we started quite early, so we used MVVM, Model View, View Model. We actually didn't implement it in the rush mode of competition very well, but we then re-architected the solution to follow MVVM a lot more closely. We used MVVM Lite, but there's more options out there today. I haven't assessed them all with Metro yet. But I'd seriously consider using a MVM framework in your solution to keep the view models separate and keep all your logic out of the presentation layer. Yep. Excellent. Well, thank you very much for attending. It's been a great audience. Thank you.